Good afternoon and welcome to Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, February 14th, Valentine's Day edition. Our 800 number is 1-800-524-3604 and our email address, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Today's panelists, Mac guru Joel Brovelite will be here, and Jeff Litterick, a technology integration specialist in Peer, joins us today. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
Reminder to listeners, if you'd like a list of the links that we're going to talk about on today's show, we'll post those to the web pretty much right along with the show at facebook.com/techradio. Again, this is your chance to call for help on SDPB Radio, 1-800-524-3604, the number, and the email address again, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Well, Jeff, I think the big news of the show is relates along the cable TV lines, and that's the buyout or the coming buyout of Time Warner and Comcast, you know, exchanging stock and becoming number one and number two becoming number one. I haven't talked to anybody that or seen any comments online that think this is a really fantastic thing to happen. And I don't know if you have either, Joel.
Just Comcast shareholders and Time Warner shareholders. I think they're the only ones that are really interested.
Jumping up and down on this?
And then the companies themselves, of course.
So what are people saying about net neutrality then?
Jeff, do you want to
kick this one off, Jeff?
Yeah. One thing to remember, at least for people for competition and net neutrality and stuff, is there's not a lot of overlap between these two cable companies. They don't really today compete against each other in the same areas. But that said, once they combine, they're not only going to be number one and two, they're going to be number one, and everyone else is so far distance it's not even going to matter. East Coast, West Coast, and parts of Texas are pretty much locked up wherever there's population between that one cable company with very few competitors. So in terms of bringing competition, reducing competition, it's not going to do that, but it creates a humongous guy who owns just about everything. Remember, Comcast owns NBC. And this is even on the TV versus the cable side and the net neutrality. They're going to be locked up and be able to dictate a lot of stuff to both the TV side and the internet side.
Yeah, are they anywhere close to us? And when I say us, I mean...
No, actually, about the only place they don't cover between the two is North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Nebraska, and down through Kansas. Everything else, and Wyoming, and kind of out that way. Everything else is pretty much covered by them, in at least the major urban areas.
Joel?
Yeah, you know, and one of the things that, you know, they came out and said, obviously, they knew when they made the announcement that everybody would be you know, up in arms and not really interested in that merger. You know, they said they would sell off several of their subscribers. And they talked a lot about television and broadcast TV and how that's not going to affect the market. I think what they're kind of keeping in their hole, you know, in their pocket, hiding the cards from everybody, is that what they really want is the infrastructure and the internet traffic. You know, as far as television, you know, nationwide, they really only control, after they would sell off some of their customer base, they would really only control about 30%. Well, that doesn't sound too bad. Still a lot, but that doesn't sound too bad. But in that 30%, they would essentially be the only option for internet as well. But the internet, they would control much more of that. And, of course, we all know that as far as internet speeds go, cable is the fastest that's available to anybody in the United States. And they talk about, well, there's wireless options, there's going to be lots of competition. There is no competition to cable internet. There is no competition to cable internet. DSL, ADSL, wireless, satellite, doesn't matter what you have. None of it is competition for cable. And that's the really...
If you need big bandwidth.
Well, everybody needs big bandwidth. I mean, there's nobody...
Here's the
deal. There's nobody that said, boy, my internet's too fast. I can't handle this speed. I really need it to slow down. You know, if you want to do modern things on the internet, you have to have a fast connection. And frankly, the fastest connection you can get in the States is pathetic compared to what you can get overseas.
Well, Jeff, go ahead
first. What customers are going to see after this is either you're going to buy Comcast, which has their data caps and premium services for 30 meg for $30 a month, or you're going to have to go to AT&T and buy a 1.5 megabit per second DSL line for, you know, $30 to $40 a month. There's really no comparison there.
Right.
Everyone's going to go with the cable company.
Well, yeah, and I still contend that you can get into DSL much cheaper than $30 or $40 a
sure,
month.
Sure, but it's not even a fraction of the speed.
But if you just need to do email and some things,
sure. But I mean,
you're on a limited budget. You're not going to pop
there.
The cable.
There are options,
but right?
The problem is when in every cable market in the country, every cable market, there is only one cable operator. For the most part, for internet,
yeah,
every cable market, and if this merger goes through, then in those cable markets, there's going to be a 60% player where they can do whatever they want. And then, of course, you know, as this relates to the discussion we had last time on air with net neutrality and that court ruling basically overturning that, if they wanted to, and they said, well, for 4 years we won't. You know, we won't slow traffic down for this provider and this, mm-hmm. Amazon or Google or Apple or whatever it is. But they would totally be within their right, and they could just steer traffic any way they want. And Jeff brings up a very good point. They also own NBC, yeah. So if they want their content from NBC to stream faster, they could just do that.
And they actually already do. It was part of the case that overturned
of course.
Net neutrality.
Yeah, of course.
Go ahead, Jeff.
One thing to remember also. In that is they've already announced that they're not guaranteeing that the rates will not keep going up. They only say they may not go up as fast, but the rates are still going to go up. And with them locked in, they're already looking to the future profits margins off these things.
I haven't seen a rate that's gone down. I mean, it's always gone up. I don't care what you're talking about. I'm talking about, you know, phones, cable, internet. Healthcare. I don't care what you're talking about.
Well,
there isn't anything that goes
and,
up.
And
so you,
that's a really good point. And to that, I think people just expect, well, my rates aren't going to go down. They're just going to, you know, the best I can do is they keep steady. And we think, okay, well, that's just the way it is. Well, that doesn't have to be the way it is.
And what,
right now, because of the dominance of cable internet, and it really is these big players, these big cable internet players. You know, you buy a package, it might be $60. For, you know, 10 megs, which is huge. It might be, if you want more than that, you might 30 megs, you might have to pay $80 a month. If you just hop over the pond to Sweden, you have your choice of 5 fiber to the spot. If you just buy an apartment in Sweden, you have 5 choices of fiber. So you're talking like 30 to 100 megabits for $30 a month. That's what they have in Sweden.
Yeah,
it's 5 times faster for half the price.
And you got a lot less area with lot more people.
It isn't. It's actually very similar to the United States. Population density is almost exactly the same as far as they clump in big cities just like we do. Their rural areas have trouble getting internet just like we do, although the internet that they do get out there is fiber.
Okay.
Not just running through cable.
Well, okay.
And one
so,
thing to remember, in South Dakota, we've never had to deal with really Comcast and Time Warner. They have a history of, not unlike our local cable companies, they don't offer rate increases. I mean, we get more bandwidth for the same rate every few years, it seems like. They don't do that. If you want 30 meg, you're going to pay a lot more than today than you do, you know, same rates as 10 years ago. So they have a very bad customer service history in rate pricing and stuff like that, too. We actually have really good deals in the Midwest here with our cable companies compared to those two.
So setting this topic aside for just a second, and as I do, I'll mention the FCC has got to bless this before it happens. So there's, you know...
The rumor is they're gonna green light it as fast as they can, actually. So
okay, well, all right. So there is a check there, but it's looking like it's already made. But
it could still happen, but because The main problem and their what they can do is compete clauses, you know, a monopoly. Well, in this case, they're already monopolies in the areas they're having with very little overlap, so they're not really competing. They're not competitors directly today. They're only kind of competitors in the more global sense, not in the areas they serve.
All right. Well, anyway, again, setting this topic aside for just a second, but talking a little bit more similarly, so fiber's the way to go in Sweden and South Korea and South Dakota. So how soon are we to? I heard this week I was in San Antonio talking to some people with digital in their title, and I hear that there's Google Fiber. Is it being plowed into Kansas City right now?
It's already
City
there.
Kansas City is fully running. They're actually in about, I want to say, 12 cities right now, or working in 12 to 14 different cities in getting their plans up. Kansas City was the first city and kind of their pilot project.
And it's apparently spurring a lot of business growth in the tech field.
Absolutely.
So to look at this the cable situation from a higher level, then is, do we really need to worry about internet and cable anyway? You know, is fiber going to come along and save the day for you, the people like you and me who need lots of bandwidth every day?
Well, not you and me. I mean, I still think I think you. Your view of that is that only these power users are using fiber.
Businesses,
anybody who wants to run a small business, anybody that wants to work from home, anybody that wants to stream high-definition video to the house, anybody that wants to cut their cable so they can watch videos online, anybody that builds websites for fun, anybody that uploads photos.
Okay, so is this going to come in?
Just about everybody.
Is Google and whoever else going to ride the horse in and save the day on this?
I would like to think so, but the unfortunate part is, you know, running fiber is a lot of infrastructure. It costs a lot of money, and there's a big dedication to it. And there's really only a few companies that can do that. And Google, obviously, is one that's interested in it in the certain areas that they want. It does drive business. It's huge for business because it allows you to do things like office-to-office conferences, upload huge files very quickly. It allows you to be much more nimble as a company. The problem is right now, because cable is dominant in every market they have, every market is separated out and has basically one cable provider, just like we do here in South Dakota. There's no desire to go into a market and say, hey, let's spend all this infrastructure and then hope we can beat cable at its game. The problem is as soon as this goes through, or if this goes through, it's just going to make it more expensive and less sure. I think the solution is for municipalities and local governments to actually start running that fiber themselves.
Jeff?
Now, a couple of the local telephone companies in the state now do run fiber to the homes. Mitchell is one. Actually, a lot of farms in the Howard and Minor County area already have fiber to the farmstead. So they're actually pulling the copper out, and whenever they need to, a telephone company needs to do runs anymore, they're not paying in copper, they're paying fiber. We've actually had to convert road signs and stuff along the interstate because they're pulling the copper out. But it's certain, basically eastern, for the most part, telephone companies that have certain population densities to make that pay off. So it is interesting. I know my uncle's farm, which is 6 miles out of town, at least if not seven, has full fiber with cable, TV, and everything coming off it from the local telephone company now. So it is coming. I just looking at the history of the telephone guys, it will come. It may take some time, and the more sparsely populated you are, the longer the wait's going to have to be. Some of the bigger cities have different challenges because of having to actually put the fiber in the ground. It's sometimes easier to put it in a small town than it is a big town, so at least cost-wise per mile. But it is coming. It's just going to take a while and because they need a return investment when they put that fiber in.
Sure, sure. Well, we need to hop off this topic and on to the next one, but to do that, we need to take a break first. When we come back, we've got a lot of little things to talk about, but they'll probably turn into a big discussion. We'll talk about those when we get back. And welcome back to this Valentine's Day edition of Dakota Midday Tech Radio. February 14th, we're back on the air. February 28th, in 2 weeks, host Keely Boltina will be here driving the conversation that day. I'll be in the beautiful, beautiful city of Rapid City covering state wrestling going on that day and the next, which happens to be March 1st. So February 28th to March 1st, state wrestling from Rapid City and Aberdeen. Of course, South Dakota Public Broadcasting has you covered. We'll be at both venues. We'll have television from both. We'll have internet from both. We'll have results and photos and more if you're a wrestling fan. 2 weeks from today, we'll be knee-deep in wrestlers. So I've got gymnastics to get out of the way in between. That'll be fun. Of a live stream from State Gymnastics coming up next week as well. And then, of course, we're into debate, and we're into basketball, and by the time you know it, we're done with March. So, anyway, join us again in 2 weeks, Dakota Midday Tech Radio, and then every time in between online for coverage of high school sports and activities and fine arts events and other things right here. Back to today's show, Joel and Jeff are here with us today, and we have a viewer email that's or listener email that's come in over the last couple of weeks, and she wanted to know. She says, "Hey, this is Kate from Pierre. Have you considered discussing the new personal cloud storage systems as a part of Tech Radio?" Answer is yes. And as a person who owns a desktop solely for storage, I would be interested in knowing your tech gurus have to say about this newish alternative. So rather than just talk about the cloud again, which is everything and nothing to some, Kate has an interesting thing here. Her desktop is basically a storage device for stuff, and I'm assuming photos, videos, audios, other O's. And so could Kate be served well with a cloud storage system? I guess that's my first question to you, Joel.
Yeah, you know, certainly. If you have a desktop or a laptop at home that the only thing it does is just a big hard drive, certainly a personal cloud storage system is a good option for you. Of course, this is nothing new. They just kind of rebranded it to call it a My Cloud or a personal cloud.
Yeah, and you've got one on the Apple side, right? That goes along with your Apple iTunes.
So that's one thing, and this is another thing. Personal cloud that I think she's talking about is essentially just a hard drive that instead of plugging into your computer, might plug into your network, your home network, and be accessible at home, of course, and then using an IP address, be accessible anywhere in the world. This is, again, nothing really new. This is something that's been around for, maybe even 8 years, 10 years. But it's been kind of rebranded as this is your personal cloud. You don't have to pay anything for it. You just buy it now, and then as long as you have an internet connection, all of your stuff can be dumped on this hard drive where you can physically see it, and you can access it anywhere in the world. You know, they range in price, $150, $100. If you want to do it through software and use a computer as your personal cloud, you could probably set it up for free. I think it's a great solution,
Help me understand this. So is this the files and things are physically on a hard drive at her house, but it's also mirrored up somewhere, or is this the cloud is a conduit to the physical manifestation in your house or apartment?
It could be, depending on the software. At its most basic, it is just a hard drive with stuff on it that you have access to wherever you go, whether that's on your local network, which of course would be the fastest, or anywhere in the world.
Oh, I get what you're saying. So almost like a media server, but with everything.
In fact, it is a media server.
Okay.
It's just rebranded as MyCloud because that'll sell more. It'll sell more copies because it's got the word cloud in it. The problem I see with that is if you're really going to access it in a lot of different places, your internet connection better be really beefy. Otherwise, it's going to be horribly slow, and you'd be way better off getting into a more standard type of cloud, whether using, Dropbox or Google Drive or, whatever.
So that you're not moving it from one place to the other, you're just getting it from the cloud.
Yeah, because the slow part is going to be your internet connection, especially the upload, because You know, as our last segment talked about, even the best internet connections, especially the upload, is super throttled here in the U.S. You might have 30 megs down, but you're probably really lucky if you're getting five up, and that's, you know, $60 to $100. So
yeah,
you're going to do it in your house, I think it's a great solution. If you're going to do it other places, you better have a really beefy connection. I think that maybe that wouldn't be the best choice.
Okay, Jeff, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, and one thing to remember about any kind of cloud, it doesn't get rid of necessary of you having to keep local copies someplace. And the most famous example just happened. This very tech-savvy person, he works in security, he works in technical field, he had a very unique Twitter handle, and the hackers wanted it. So they broke into Amazon, used that to leverage social engineer Apple support to get into his iCloud, and then from that, reset his Gmail, wiped out his iCloud, reset commands to all of his Apple devices, wiping them out, and then wiped out all of the stuff he had on Gmail, completely gone, and then deleted the account so there was no recovery method at all, and then basically held him hostage until he turned over the Twitter account, and actually they got it at the end, the Twitter handle, and he had to actually send his Mac OS hard drive in for data recovery to get back pictures he had lost. So that's an extreme example. He was a targeted attack, but it can happen. The cloud service providers don't always back up your data either. Accounts can be canceled, and like if your YouTube account is canceled, they won't even talk to you. You have no standing. Everything you have up there is gone. It just is. So remember, any kind of cloud storage, you still have to do your backups.
All right. I thank you for the admonishment on that. Yeah, it makes your head swim, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I think in the question, you know, would a personal cloud be a good solution for me? Again, I think it would just go back to where you plan to use it.
Right.
If you plan to use it in your house, I think they're great. You already are using a personal cloud storage if you're storing your stuff on a computer and then using the network to get it off. A cloud storage might just be simpler and use a little less power.
And it'd be a nice backup for in case that hard drive did crash.
Yeah, but as Jeff says, if you hook it up to the, you know, to the internet so you can access it, well, actually, you may not even make that choice. It might just do that automatically.
Right.
It will be vulnerable, so you're still going to want to make a backup of that stuff, a physical backup besides it being on a hard drive. Don't let the fact that it's a hard drive fool you.
Okay.
It still might be vulnerable. But that's the case with anything, so we could just say, make sure you back your stuff up, and that would still cover this as well.
But yep. If you are a mobile person, cloud storage is the only way to go. It is so nice to be able to move wherever you are and access all the files you need to, not having to wait to go home to look at something or something like that. If you are a mobile user, you almost have to go cloud storage anymore.
And in that case, I would recommend using a standard cloud service like Dropbox or Google Drive, because you're going to get much faster and reliable speeds. I would not use a personal cloud storage if you plan to use it a lot away from your residence or office, wherever you plan to put this.
Are the services, and stepping away a little bit from this specific question, but on the same topic, I guess, so are the cloud services that are offered by places like Amazon for media and Google and for the media part of that, and then I just noticed my Verizon contract is coming up, so I've been poking around in the Verizon website. Now, as a part of the new package that they'd like you to buy into, 25 gigs of personal cloud storage is included with your plan. Is that different than is that kind of a different cloud? I mean, in retrospect to this question,
it's a different provider. It's not really a different cloud. All those, be it Dropbox, be it your Verizon stuff, they're all just kind of file storage servers out up there on the internet to store files and let you access them from any device that you can log into the storage from. So it's just more a provider. And right now, especially, it's kind of a big moneymaker. Storage is kind of cheap to buy in mass. When you buy a lot of storage, it becomes fairly inexpensive. You can even see, you know, what you pay for your own personal PCs is pretty inexpensive now, too. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a pretty good moneymaker. And there's a lot of providers doing it now.
So the best answer there is they may all be sort of the same.
It's just
but
a
it's
matter
just
of
what's
you
more
know,
convenient
yeah,
for you.
Who do you trust? You know, whose package do you like? What fits in your budget?
Sure.
There's lots of free options. This is what kind of car do you want to buy? You know, who are you loyal to? What sneakers do you wear? That's all those online cloud services. I think they're all great, and I think they're more secure than having it on a hard drive at home, frankly. So.
And I've got a question about the hard drive at home thing, but I'm going to throw the forum to George from Sioux Falls here. George, you have a question about transferring files. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have an XP computer. I just acquired a computer with Windows 7. I know I can transfer the files by just putting them on a hard drive and moving them over. But what about the programs? Do I have to reload every single program, or is there some way to transfer programs?
Okay. Jeff, I think I know the answer to this, but go ahead.
And especially if you're running Windows 7 64-bit, you're going to have to reinstall all the programs. And if you're running 64-bit, if you're running really old programs, some may not install because they're not compatible. You may actually have to get new versions. But yes, for programs, you have to reinstall the data. You can just move over in a few different ways. But a USB key or drive is probably the easiest.
Okay.
Well, I think this is a 32-bit computer. It runs 7, but it's an older computer.
In which case, it should run all your old programs, but you still have to reinstall them.
Yep. Can't transfer those. Yeah, they need to be installed from the setup, and that way everything's going to work great for you.
So the point is, I can transfer my files with a cable or putting them on an external hard drive, but all my programs will have to be reinstalled.
That is correct, yes.
Yep. And it's a great idea to do the hard drive, and that way you've got a backup of it. You know, if something were to happen with the new computer at some date, you've got all the stuff that you start, you know, kind of the clean start part of it, too. So a little bonus there, way to think about it, George. But good luck with your new computer.
Yeah, I've got carbonite, so everything's all backed up already.
Oh, good for you.
I could probably download it from them, but I do have an external 80 gigabyte hard drive. So now, I don't have 2,000 pictures on my computer. I don't even have 80 gigs used on the old computer. So it sounds like that's what I'll have to do.
Sounds great. Thanks for the question today, George. Okay. Appreciate it.
Well, you didn't give me the answer I wanted, but unfortunately, the truth hurts.
We can't guarantee that.
Now, one thing going forward about that is Windows 8 and then now Windows 9 have different functionality. So through the apps in Metro, a lot of stuff will not have to be reinstalled. You just will log in and they will reinstall themselves. But that's in the future. It is changing, but for right now, you do have to reinstall.
Yep. That's the unfortunate part of it. Like I said, for trying to make lemonade out of lemons, the good thing is that you'll have, well, he's got carbonite, but you'll have a good local copy, too, of all the files. So off we go there. Reminder again, folks, our 800 number, as George found out, is 800-524-3604. That's the number to call. You can do what Kate did and send us an email, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, at sdpb.org. Or if you're on Facebook now anyway, it's your noon hour, or you're getting close to it, and you'd like to hop out on Facebook, there's a couple of things to check out on that page, facebook.com/techradio. We'd love you to like us there, share anything you see there, or ask any questions for the show. We can start a conversation there. If it makes it on the air, great. If it doesn't, we'll still have a great conversation. Facebook.com/techradio. Joel, I know there was some topics you wanted to talk about today. Jawbone is... do we need to talk about what Jawbone is again? It's not just a speaker company. They also do a lot of wearable tech and other things. They're gaining some momentum. How do you mean?
Well, Jawbone is a company that makes... as you mentioned, they make speakers, they make headsets, they make hands-free talking devices, they make wearable technology, wristbands that track your movement and pulse and things like that. But they keep kind of sneaking into these different environments, and they're doing very well. The reason they seem to be a company to watch is they've been making all of these partnerships with companies like Google and social media companies like Facebook and Twitter, and they really seem to be doing things right. You know, for a while, if you've been listening to our show, you'll hear us mention kind of the big four: Apple, Microsoft, Google, Facebook, and maybe five. We might add Twitter to that.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon, you're going to hear us start talking about Jawbone as one of those. This is my prediction,
mm-hmm.
as one of those companies, kind of in the same way that, you know, back in the early 90s and certainly in the 80s, if you're talking technology, you were talking Sony. I really think Jawbone has kind of tapped into that type of market with technology, and they're making great devices that look good, they function well, they have a certain amount of sex appeal to them, they're making really great partnerships and good decisions. So I think we're going to see a lot more from Jawbone, certainly this year. And going into next year. And the really interesting part is if they start getting into online or software environment.
And along those lines, Jeff, did you have anything that you wanted to say about Jawbone or about the subject?
No, I'm kind of a newbie to Jawbone yet myself. So.
All right. Okay. One thing I wanted to do, did we talk about the Nest being bought by Google yet?
We did talk about that on the last show.
Okay,
yeah,
did. Okay.
Yeah, and that's a huge. You know, it's funny that relates directly to you know what I mentioned about Jawbone. You know, I think Google sees that, you know, this very specific and intelligently engineered hardware is gaining serious ground. Whether you're talking about the Nest or the Hue bulbs, and certainly some of the new Jawbone devices and wearable tech, I think Google sees the writing on the wall as Apple does. And, you know, with Jawbone, you know, they just made a $250 million investment I'll have to double check it, but
mm-hmm.
they made a huge investment in some technology. And, you know, I think going forward, that's going to be the thing to watch, is this very specific, intelligently designed hardware.
Sure. We have another caller. Dwayne from Sioux Falls has a question about installing a new hard drive. Let's go ahead and take Dwayne's call before break. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, and enjoy listening to you guys.
Great.
Yeah, this is an eight-year-old Hewlett-Packard. Hard drive finally went out, believe it or not, lasted that long.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a 500-gig hard drive, and I picked up a 1-terabyte hard drive to replace it. Well, I've got the DVDs where you can, you know, to put it back to factory settings.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three of those. Went through the song and dance and the pony show there, got to the end. And multiple times I've done this. Got clear to the end, and I forget the exact wording, but it shows up. Could not install because of a conflict in hardware. My question would be, I've tried everything I can think of or find on the internet. I'm wondering if the and I should mention the there's also a diagnostic DVD from Hewlett-Packard, and that shows on that the motherboard does see that 1 terabyte hard drive.
Okay,
it recognizes it, but my question is, I wonder if the BIOS, being it's 8 years old, is not able to partition the new hard drive or some such thing. And so that's okay. Where I'm at.
Sure. Jeff, do you have an answer for Dwayne?
Well, if the BIOS recognizes it, and what you might want to do is usually you can go in and see more detailed stats it finds about the hard drive. It should support it. Now, it is correct. Certain motherboards over time, as hard drives have grown, will not support higher hard drives or require that hard drive to be partitioned into multiple ones. And that's also an OS restriction, too. What OS are you running? Well, we're running on the old
Vista.
Box.
Vista.
Okay, so Vista shouldn't have a problem with that. What you may be running into is, because you were using recovery disks, is, and I ran into this one time, too, is some of the hardware manufacturers over time have locked in. So if you change the configuration, like i.e., so I got a bigger hard drive, the system restore disk will not work anymore because they're looking for that old size hard drive to partition it, and when they see a different hard drive size, it just can't work. Do you still have the original? Usually there's a way to get around that in the reinstall process where you don't tell it to just restore the OS or something like that instead of the whole system?
No, I don't have that. I might add, too, that I did stop, in fact, just a few minutes ago and took back the terabyte hard drive and picked up a 500 gig, which it came with, thinking along your lines.
Right, and that would work. The only other way would be get OS install disk and then just install the OS from, you know, a OEM copy, which shouldn't matter what hardware you're in because it will redetect all your hardware. But running Vista, you should be able to support a terabyte hard drive. Your motherboard's seen it. I think it's more a process that the install, the reinstall, is tied to a specific hard drive because it probably partitions it into two sections. One is a hidden one for a quick factory default install. There's actually two partitions when it gets done, and it probably can't partition because it's confused about the size it's seen.
Okay, so I'm on the right track. I'm going to settle for the 500-gig hard drive, the same as what was in it out of the factory. And so we're both talking on the same page there. Does that sound like a good idea to you?
I think that's going to be a good start, Dwayne.
Any other ideas if that doesn't work, guys?
If that doesn't work, you need to get, maybe you could talk to Hewlett-Packard. Sometimes they'll ship it out for a price. The OEM version of the operating system, Vista's kind of old. You can't get in the stores anymore. But you're going to have to install it from scratch, the OS,
definitely,
where it will detect all the hardware and support it. At that point, I'd probably go to Windows 7 or 8 and just install that instead.
Or on hardware that old, maybe switch to Ubuntu.
Yeah.
7 or 8, which one would you recommend? 7?
7 would be closer. 8 actually, 8 has a new interface and stuff, though it's actually less resource intensive than 7 and actually runs faster. It's kind of a personal preference. You can go either way. 7 is going to be more like what you're used to, though, while 8 is kind of a radical departure in the UI. So it's more a matter of user preference, not technical.
Okay.
Okay. Well, hey, I appreciate it, guys. It sounds like I'm on the right track. If you were me, that's what you'd do is put a 500-gig hard drive back in and give it a shot. Huh?
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Thanks, Dwayne. We appreciate the question today.
Appreciate your help, guys. Enjoy the show. Thanks.
Yep. And props to Dwayne for trying to resuscitate an 8-year-old laptop. I'm not sure that Joel, you or I would have attempted that.
I would not have.
Yeah. But so, like I said, major props to Dwayne. Get that baby running again. I might have considered even, like I said, I mentioned Ubuntu or a Linux version on that older hardware to make that thing fly. But hey, great. I hope he gets it working, and I hope contact us back and let us know how that goes. We are a little over time for taking a break. Let's go ahead and do that, and we come back. We've got a follow-up on George's question and lots more topics to get to right after this. And welcome back to this final segment of Dakota Midday Tech Radio for Friday, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Reminder, facebook.com/techradio. There's a link out there I thought it'd be kind of fun to put up for today. It talks about sexy apps for Valentine's Day. And there's some games and some how-tos and some other things. And we're not going to really get into the content of those things, although we are adult-themed show. We're not going to get into adult topics today, but if you're interested in perusing some of those types of Valentine's apps for you and your significant other.
I think they're more romantic than sexy, I would say.
Yeah, so. I think so, too. So if you want to get your app on for the romantic side of things on Valentine's Day, better than us talking about it on this show, we're just going to send you the link. The fine folks from Mashable put that together, and we appreciate it.
And suddenly our Facebook account gets more hits than it has in months.
In months, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, there's some kind of cool things on there. Reminder to listeners, if you like the list of links that we talk about on today's show, of course, they're there at facebook.com/techradio. Today, joined by Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite, and Jeff Litterick, our technology integration specialist, is in Peer, talking today on the show on our topics. We did have an email as a follow-up to George earlier in the show. Jim asks, how many programs, as opposed to data stored, are available in the cloud so a person doesn't need to have a program physically on one's hard drive? So he's talking about running apps or running those programs So here's what I'm thinking. This is so like in, you go, you get into your Google space, wherever that is, and you're using the sort of online word processor, the document editor, Google Docs. You're using that instead of like Microsoft Word or OpenOffice or whatever on the hard drive. That's what I think he's asking. So
yeah, well, one thing to remember is you can actually, in fact, Microsoft kind of pushes new users to this. Run Office off the cloud too. Adobe has gone all this way with their products. So there's actually a lot of products out there now that you, in the newer versions, you can are designed to run off the cloud in your browsers. So, and some you pay for, and some are free. It's kind of a big trend, and for the major, you know, the Photoshops, the Offices, stuff like that, you can. So there are options out there depending on what apps you need to run.
So this is the whole Chromebook sort of philosophy, right? As long as you're connected to the internet and have a good connection, you can do all these things.
Yeah, the Microsoft Office is called Office 365, and that's all cloud and runs off the browser. You just log in from anywhere to your documents. It also has some storage, and you have the full Office suite. And Adobe has the same way for their Content Creative Suite.
Okay. Would there be instances that we would not want to do this? We would want to have the program physically.
Well, if you do not have internet access, you can't run the program. It's not like it downloads and just runs. The second you lose network access, the app just stops working. I mean, you have to have a constant internet connection that's stable and fairly moderate speed, at least, if not high speed.
Okay. So there are pluses and minuses. And definitely one of the pluses, I guess, in George and Jim's case here specifically is that you move to a different machine, you log on to your browser, and you start using your products and your documents that you were using before without having to really do anything else. And you could, for instance, and I'm not trying to loop other people into this, but in Dwayne's instance, if he couldn't get Vista up and running on that 8-year-old laptop, he could throw a copy of Linux on there and log in using the browser, and he's off using his documents and all his cloud storage stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Now, one thing I will mention on just because most people are used to buying a software product and then you buy it once and you use it. Almost all of the online stuff is a per monthly charge where you pay per month, and you could pay multiple months in advance, but it's more of a subscription model for both Microsoft and Adobe, where you're going to pay, for CS, it's like $19 or $12 a month, and then you, as long as you pay that per month, you'll have access to those apps. If you don't need the app anymore, just stop payment. And you'll always have the very latest and up-to-date version. You don't have to worry about upgrades and stuff like that anymore.
Okay, another plus. You're shaking your head, Joel.
No, I'm saying can't beat that. That's the way to go. I mean, I think we a long time ago that we thought this was the way things were going to go, and it's now even easier than I think we anticipated it would be to do this.
Yeah, it's nice when you're surprised in a pleasant way.
Yeah, right.
I got to tell you, when your technology breaks and it's easier to recover from what used to be kind of a tragic thing. You start to realize that these things pay benefits and dividends in a lot of lost time and productivity and heartbreak in some cases on a lot of that stuff. So you know, the age-old question, is the internet good or bad? And
yes is the answer.
Yeah, you've heard that one, haven't you? Yeah, exactly. So we have a couple of the topics we were going to get to today, and we've got just a few minutes left on them. Jeff, did you have a really quick update on the whole Target sort of fiasco? There was an interesting twist on this whole thing.
It ties into a lot of what we've talked about in the past. The way this all boiled down to Target, remember, 108 million accounts hacked and credit cards. The original start was a simple spam email sent to a refrigeration company, not even a Target. It was sent to a refrigeration company with malware, one of those, you know, just fleecing emails everybody gets. Don't click on the link. Don't install the program. Well, that contractor, refrigeration contractor, seems to have clicked on it, installed malware, and captured the passwords he was using to log into Target's network. And there, the information was sold to other people, or those hackers then used that to go into Target's network and actually install malware on every single cash register they had in the entire system, and that's how they grabbed all the credit card data. It's funny.
Seemingly
it wasn't
unrelated.
An elaborate big setup. It all started from a simple email set, and someone clicked on something they shouldn't have clicked on. It gets back to what we say all the time, you know, don't click on stuff. It can lead to much bigger issues.
Yeah, that can be one thing. And so there's speaking of interesting little kind of crazy, goofy things, was reading, Jeff, about an exploit for Internet Explorer 10, I believe, and an interesting twist on that combination with Flash and websites. Mm-hmm. Did you read about the VFW, the Veterans of Foreign War website hack? The hackers installed an iframe on the website of the company or the business or whatever you want to classify that as. So they targeted a specific group of individuals with an exploit to try to hack computers, and I thought that was an interesting twist. So not only is it using a combination of different exploits, but then a targeted thing as well.
Well, here's a new one too.
Yeah.
This is kind of the first. Normally we target, you know, computers, general purpose. There's actually malware going out there spreading on Linksys routers, and it actually infects the router and then uses the router to find new victims and self-replicate. It doesn't infect PCs. It doesn't infect Macs. It doesn't infect general computing. It just infects Linksys routers, and it's kind of spreading like crazy because it's not updated firmware for some routers. So fairly older Linksys router. So if you're running an older Linksys router, probably time to upgrade. But that's a new attack method, too, automated network device attacks, and that's something new, too.
We have a quick question here. For you, Joel, a PowerBook with 10.7.5 on it. I have a disk image with files on the desktop. Whenever I open one of the Excel files, it always opens a copy, but it only happens with one of the files. How can I stop this? Let me see if I can reread this question. Did that make sense to you?
Not entirely. I don't have it in front of me. It says when he opens a Excel file, it opens a copy only. Is that correct?
Right, right.
I think that's probably more of a function of Excel. It's probably saved as a template or a base file. I don't know if that's a term that they still use. So what happens is you can create a template or a script in Excel and lots of programs where when you save it, it's this file that's just sitting there. But when you open it again, instead of editing that original file, it opens kind of a copy
right.
of it so that you're not destroying the original. You might use this if you do an inventory or you do a form letter that you do all the time. So probably what happened is you accidentally saved it in this template or script format, and I forget what it's called. So probably what you want to do is open it up and resave it as kind of a standard .xls file. And that should probably fix it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Joel Brovelite from Sioux Falls, for joining us today, sharing your thoughts and expertise on a number of issues. Thank you so much. And Jeff Litterick from BIT in Peer. Thank you so much again for your time as well, Jeff. Reminder to listeners, if you joined us late, the version of the show and the podcast is available on the website, sdpb.org. Specifically, listen.sdpb.org for the radio side of things in the house. Join us again on the 28th of this month. Again, host Keely Boltina will guide the tech gurus through another hour of Dakota Midday Tech Radio, and we appreciate her thoughts and filling in on the last program as well. So thank you so much, Keely. Stay tuned to South Dakota Public Broadcasting. The news is next, followed by Talk of the Nation Science Friday.